Okay. Good afternoon. Good afternoon. Come on, two sessions left of the week. Let's try that again. Good afternoon. There we go. That's much better. I know, after lunch, last day. So welcome to X18. This is developing iPhone and iPad apps that leverage Windows Azure. My name's Simon Guest. I work for a company called Neudesic. And I'm sure it's very similar to many of you in the audience. I go to a lot of conferences. I do some speaking. Sometimes I'm on a panel. Sometimes I'm in the audience. And you know what? Some conferences are just more interesting than others. And now, of course, MIX is always interesting, and who can forget things that have happened in the previous MIXes. But what I always find when I'm at conferences is there's always a need to do things. So I spend a week at a conference, and I want to share stuff. Maybe it's photos from the party or just general things that I found during the week. I also want to find that I want to access the agenda. So I always lose the bit of paper. I don't know what's on next. It's kind of infuriating. And finally, I want to find out what's happening, what's new. I want to be able to keep up to date. So the latest sessions, the sessions that are announced after the keynotes, any room changes, and that kind of thing. So with my iPhone in hand, I kind of thought, there's got to be an app for that. But I did some searching, and actually there's not. So I thought, well, hang on, maybe this is an opportunity for this session. What would it be like if we created an application for the conference, and then at the same time, given that we heard so much about Windows Azure in the keynote and other sessions, kind of link these two together. So how do I keep my same three scenarios and yet kind of build on Azure? So scenario one, kind of sharing and uploading stuff. My thought is, okay, well, how do I take an iPhone or an iPad and actually connect it with the cloud? Secondly, accessing the agenda is probably going to be about accessing applications in the cloud. And finally, keeping up to date is really about thinking, is there anything in Windows Azure that will actually send stuff to me on a real-time basis? So with these three scenarios in mind, I kind of want to spend the next 55 minutes or so kind of going through. And the goal here is to just show you some of the possibilities. So if you are developing applications on iOS, i.e., for the iPhone and iPad today, just show you some of the possibilities that are available to you as developers using Windows Azure. So scenario one, using the cloud for storage. My goal is, hey, I've got my iPhone, and I want to connect to the cloud and share stuff with others. And Windows Azure today supports two types of storage, and you've probably heard of these. The first is called blob storage. The second is called table storage. Blob storage is really most suitable for binary data. So images, video, photos, music, audio, anything that you store in a binary format on the phone really suits well in blob storage on Windows Azure. It uses what's called a container-based approach, and we'll cover that shortly. And it's also possible to attach a small piece of metadata to each blob that you store in the storage. So maybe it's the title or the author or a small description. Table storage is most suited for structured data. So this is non-relational, dynamic data. You may think of things like maybe an agenda or high scores on a game that you're writing. And one of the things about table storage is that it's very easy to scale. So when you use table storage, you access what's called a partition, and then configuring these partitions gives you scale at a great depth. So let's have a look at blob storage. So I have my iPhone. I want to use blob storage. And one scenario that comes to mind is all the photos that I've been taking all week. So I was coming from the airport, snapped a quick picture of the hotel. I snapped a quick picture just before the keynote started, at the end of the first day. I even managed to get a couple from the party last night. And one of the things I really want to do that is share all of the beautiful photos of my coworkers with other people at the conference. So with that in mind, what does that look like? Well, first of all, we need to actually start by creating and using an account. So signing on to Azure is fairly simple. You can either opt for a paid subscription, or there's many kind of 30-day trials available. When you actually configure your account, you'll create what's called a new storage account using a portal that looks very similar to this. And after that's configured, you'll find that you get two URLs. So you get a blob URL. In this case, it's called iostest.blob.core.windows.net. And you get a table URL that's for table storage. And then you'll notice those two fields above there, primary access key and secondary access key. Well, when you click the view button, what this does is it gives you a fairly long base64 encoded string. This is your keys to that storage. So this is what you're going to use on the phone to actually upload things. So you saw the two URLs there. Those two URLs are actually REST endpoints. So for blob storage, you'll have HTTP, your account, blobcorewindows.net, and those REST APIs, or those REST endpoints, expose a series of APIs for working with blob storage. So for example, I can create, list, and delete containers. A container is really nothing more than a folder. So maybe I want to store all of my mix photos in a folder called Photos. And then also the REST API gives me the ability to do CRUD, create, read, update, and delete operations on blobs as well. So how do we go about calling that? So we're going to make a REST call. It's going to be a GET. And the goal is just to get a list of containers from storage. What you're going to do within the application is construct the REST call. It's going to have three attributes. It's going to require the date, a version number, and a blob type. And then we're going to actually have to authorize or create some kind of authorization. Now, how do we do that? Well, you remember that account key that you saw in the portal. We don't actually pass that back and forth. That would be fairly insecure in case it kind of got lost somewhere in transit. So the way this works is we actually build up a request. So you see the third line down there is the actual request of the operation that we want to do with blob storage. We take that account key, and we use what's called a HMAC SHA-256 algorithm to create a digest or a hash based on that request. So what we're doing is we're saying, look, these are the types of things that I want. I'm going to sign this with my key. I'm going to use that or pass that computed hash to blob storage. The server's going to do a very similar operation. And if those two hashes match, then yes, you're allowed or given access to blob storage. So once we've got a list of containers, effectively we make that call. The result from the REST endpoint is going to be an XML document that's going to look fairly similar to the one that you see on the screen. We go down, we see a list of containers. Here's my photo container. And from there, you can kind of drill into some of the properties. Now, as you can imagine, kind of doing a put operation is very similar. We're going to create a REST put operation. Again, we're going to need those three attributes. Again, we're going to compute the authorization using that computed hash. And this time, what we're going to do is, as part of that put operation, we're going to actually send a binary representation of the photo itself. So rather than torture you with yet more REST and XML, I thought maybe the easiest way is just to kind of hop into a demo and see if we can't get this working ourselves. So this is a small application that I've been working on. In terms of UI, this is fairly phenomenal. I'm just going to switch here. There we go. So I got one screen, one button called Take a Picture. And what this does is effectively invokes some code behind. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to just kind of scroll down. When I actually press the take picture button there, it invokes the camera control under the application. So it's when I click on the button, the kind of calls, the necessary calls to invoke the camera modal view controller setup. And then once I actually accept a camera that a picture that I've taken, I get the actual image data here. And then I've got this kind of thing says, this comment that just says, now all I need to do is upload to Windows Azure. So what we've done at Nudesic is we've taken a lot of those REST calls and we've built kind of a wrapper or helper API, which will hopefully abstract a lot of what you can see. So up at the top here, you'll see that I'm importing some header files. I've got authentication credential, cloud storage client, and a blob container. And I'm just going to write some code to see actually how this works in Windows Azure. So first of all, I'm going to create a new authentication credential. And I'm going to pass it the account name, which was iOS test, and my account key. That was some pretty quick typing. And then from that credential, what I'm going to do is I'm going to create a new cloud storage client. So I create a new client. And just pass it the credential object that we created earlier. So now I've got my credentials. Now I've got my client working. Let's see what we get from the client. So if I do an autocomplete, you can kind of see some of the kind of familiar operations that you probably expect. So get blob containers, get blob data, that kind of thing. For this particular demo, I'm going to put a photo from the camera into blob storage. So let's actually start by creating a new blob container. And the container name is photos. I give it the URL that you saw. And just a piece of metadata, just to keep it happy. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to say client add blob to container. Give it that particular container. The blob name, so I'm going to call this myphoto.jpg. The data itself, so this is the image data that came from the camera. What type it is, this is an image WAC JPEG. And then a lot of the operations in the API support the block API, which is a kind of a Lambda expression. So I'm going to call that. And if everything looks good, oops, note to self, keep escaping. If everything looks good, uploaded, what did I call it? Myphoto.jpg. Okay, so let's switch over to my device here. It's not possible to run the camera in the emulator, so I have my device with a kind of camera running here. I'm going to run that on the device. I'll try that again. Oh, yeah. demo gods. Third time it always works. You're killing me. Yeah, there we go. All right, we're going to try disconnecting and reconnecting, and then I'm going to ashamedly move on. So yes, please visit the Windows Mobile 7 booth in the Commons. Okay, so I am going to move quickly on, and we'll see if we can recover that in a minute. It's not launching. Okay, never mind. But that was a really cool demo. So moving on from kind of blob storage, one of the second storage type is table storage. As I mentioned, this is kind of structured storage, so the ability to kind of put very scalable relational, or non-relational, but scalable entities in the cloud. Again, when you actually look at a lot of the REST operations for this, then it's very similar to what you saw on the blob storage side. You put together a REST call. You're actually going to compute that hash again. You're going to get a list of tables back in XML. And there we go. So if we were to do the same kind of thing, you could imagine that maybe we want to attach a document to the photo that we uploaded, or maybe set some of the properties correctly. The way that you would do this is effectively put together a REST put call. Actually construct the kind of XML document and then use that together with the computed hash to get this thing working. So again, this would have been a fine time to flick to another demo to show you table storage. I am going to at least walk you through the API to show you what this thing looks like. Okay, that's a fine idea. Okay, I'm going to just do a restart. Let that thing warm up. So let's take a quick look at some of the table API while we're doing that. Just to give you a flavor of what this thing looks like. Effectively, to create a new row into a table, we create a new entity. I'm going to call it photo data. And we create entity. Oh, now it's all going horribly wrong. Create entity for table. We give it a table name. We have a table in here called photo data. We set a partition key. So photo data dot partition key equals, and then let's call it just A. We set a row key. So this is just like a unique identifier. Let's call it 1001. And then within that entity, we can then start setting some values. So let's say that we're going to set a value. Let's imagine that I would have taken a picture of the fine audience. So good-looking crowd. For key, let's call this a description. And then some value. And then we probably have, let's say, about 100 people in here. For key, audience size. And then all we need to do once we've created that row is we say client, insert entity, give it the photo data entity itself with block. And then if there's no error, let's say photo data was written. So with my beautiful iPhone 4 rebooted, let's connect. Oh, this is looking better. Okay, let's pray that the demo gods. So here's my beautiful UI. Apologies for the picture quality. So very simple, just says take a picture there. I'm going to point at you fine folks. I'm going to hit take picture first. That opens the camera dialog. I point it at a beautiful audience that I have. Oh, look at that. There you all are. There's a button down here that says use, so I'm going to hit use. And I'm going to quickly switch to here and look down the debug window here. So we got the picture. Hopefully it's making the call. So it has uploaded photo.jpg, and the photo data was apparently written. So let's test that out. I've got an instance of Azure Storage Explorer working here. I got my photos bucket here. I'm going to do a refresh. Which I'm going to re-click on that. There is my photo.jpg. So this came directly from the device. And double-click on there. We hit image. Obviously, don't really support any scaling here, but just to prove that it worked, there all you beautiful people are. Hey, he's even smiling. And then we go into table storage, which is the data storage. We have this photo data entity, or photo data table. We hit query. And there is our record that is attached and was uploaded. So finally. Apologize for the phone reboot. So I just wanted to do a quick show of hands. How many iOS developers are there in the audience? Wow, that's a great number. So one of the things that we've also been extending the API is to look at a lot of the syntax that the existing iOS developers are used to. So let me go into Storage Explorer here. I've got a table here called developers. And when I do a query here, it lists six developers. What I can do is I can issue a predicate call and actually do a lot of filtering across that table. So I just did a code snippet there, just in the interest of time. But anyone that's used to NS Predicate, effectively you can create a predicate request. You can pass it a particular query. So just give me the records that match Steve, Eric, or Ling. We put that into a fetch request. We access the developers table. And then when we make the call, we hopefully see that there are X number of developers. So I'm going to be really brave and try running this application again. And just comment out, I don't want to take the picture again. And this application is launching. I'm just going to tell it to take a picture to get it past this stage. And then in the debug window, what it will do is it will call that predicate, and you will see that, yes, indeed, there are three developers that match that criteria. So all in all, for anyone that's used this against things like Core Data, this is the same API but going against a table storage or a table that's stored in table storage on Windows Azure. So to kind of continue the demo, one of the things I was thinking about is, well, with all of this data in the cloud, now what? And, of course, I was thinking kind of prepping up or leading up to the demo, maybe we could do something like, some thumbnail generation or something. And then a couple of days ago, I ran across at Mix a company called Digital Office. And Digital Office have been working on, a really interesting example that fits in here. So, of course, I don't need to emphasize or retell the story about what's happening in Japan, but I think a lot of the media, while it's focusing on the nuclear aspects, is kind of failing to pick up on, say, a lot of the rescue efforts that are actually happening, and when you kind of look at a lot of those efforts, it's fairly amazing. One example of, I think, how the folks at Digital Office are kind of driving this forward is through an application they've written called JRescue. And JRescue is an application, a native application for multiple platforms. And it's an application that, in the event of an emergency, lets you know, or lets others know, your whereabouts and whether you're safe or not. So here's a few screenshots. That the way this happens, and this has, of course, been translated, is you open the application. You effectively have the ability to record a 10-second message. So, hey, I'm here, I'm safe. That kind of thing. You have the ability to take a photo of the scene that you're at. And then they have this on the second screen here, this button called Send Mail. It doesn't actually send an email. It actually packages it up into a REST-based message that gets sent to Azure, Blob, and Table Storage. And, of course, one of the benefits of having that type of data in the cloud is, of course, you can start aggregating a lot of this. So you pull together this data. You can then, of course, pinpoint it on a particular map. You can identify where people are, where people are hurt, and really just gives the rescue teams a lot of good kind of situational analysis. This app was fairly amazing. It was developed in less than 5 days following the tragedy. For anyone that's interested, the team from Digital Office is here in the front row. Hamada-san is the CEO. And I think it's just a great example of taking some of the technology we're talking about in this session and really applying it to a real-world case. So scenario one kind of looked at moving stuff into the cloud from a storage perspective. Some of the takeaways, Blob storage is great for images, videos, and audio, so any binary data. Table storage is going to be your friend for structured data. And you'll get to a point where you can do these REST calls natively, but also accessing them via a library is going to be the way to go. Things to watch out for, a couple of things. Blob storage doesn't offer any hierarchical structure today, so you get a flat list of containers. So if you're doing things like, hey, I want to back up my phone or do a really structured list of photos, then that's something you're going to have to deal with yourself. And also, computing the REST signatures can be a little complex, and they also differ between the two storage types. So getting a good debugger or network sniffer in the middle is definitely going to be your friend. So now that we've looked at using the cloud for storage, how about accessing applications in the cloud? What does this look like? And one of the things I always find during the conference is just the need to find out where my next session is. And yes, I could use the bit of paper that we all picked up, or because there's no native client, maybe I could go to the site and kind of do pinch scrolling and that kind of thing. But it's not really a very optimal kind of solution. So what typically, or what happens a lot of time with conferences, is they'll do the website, and then they'll get this kind of rushed native application out the door a few days prior, which tends to be kind of buggy and kind of difficult to use. So one of the things I was thinking is, well, what if we took the website as it existed today? What if we're able to run that in Windows Azure? Is there anything that would give us from a mobile perspective? So in Azure, we have something called the web role. This is effectively a web server role. You can run whatever you want, but typically it's ASP.NET or ASP.NET MVC. So let's imagine for a minute that the actual MIC site was running there. Now, of course, when you access web roles in Azure, just like any other web service, the browser is going to pass through what's called a user agent. So this is the user agent for Windows 7 and IE8. This is basically a 4 or 5 line of text. It's going to describe what the browser is, what operating system is running, that kind of thing. And surprisingly, or not surprisingly, when you access it from either an iPhone or an iPad, then you get a user agent that's kind of tied to that device as well. Now, it doesn't take a stroke of genius to work out that you could actually filter on the user agent. So if we had a website running in Azure, then we could say, well, look for the user agent, look for a particular key that identifies a particular device, and then serve up a different set of pages based on the type of device that I see. And that will work, but you tend to run into trouble quickly because you end up with lots of different pages for lots of different devices. So using the MVC model, we can actually break that down so that everything goes through a controller, and then you have a separate view and maybe a separate set of CSS for each kind of device that you're targeting. However, that doesn't come without problems either, because what you quickly end up with is potential spaghetti code in the controller, where you're constantly looking for headers, you're constantly saying, oh, well, if this is an iPhone, do this, if this is Android, do this, that kind of thing. So one of the things that the ASP.NET MVC team have done to make this really easy is included what's called an ASP.NET MVC view engine. And I just want to show you what the view engine looks like, and show you how it works against the phone. So I'm just going to pull up the site that I've created for the mix demo. Obviously, it doesn't have the same Chrome that the site does. So I'm kind of using the default one, but this should look very familiar for anyone that's either done any MVC or seen the keynote. And what I got is a small database on the back end, actually hosted in SQL Azure, and actually reports the sessions that are going on currently. And I kind of like this because if you're in the audience and, I know, maybe the demos aren't working or you don't like my presentation, at least I can give you some value of where you can go next. So we've got a list of sessions there, and let's pull this up in the simulator and see what this looks like. So I'm going to go to exactly the same site. And as you can see, I've got a scaled down version of the site. So just like the real site, hey, this isn't very usable. So what can we do to use a view engine to at least first detect what the device is? So I'm going to go into Visual Studio here. And this is the actual MVC project of the application that you saw. And within a file called global ASAX, which is the file that gets kind of loaded for the whole site when the project starts, I can actually write some code to inject a new view engine. So viewengines.engines.clear. So we get we start from scratch, and then viewengines.engines.addMobile. I'm going to create a web form view engine. And I'm going to get two parameters here. One is a unique or a string that appears within the user agent. So it's called an iPhone. And then the second is a path to where I want the user to be taken if that is detected. So let's call it mobile WAC iPhone. And this particular, there's a few implementations of View Engine throughout the web. This particular one I shamelessly stole from Scott Hanselman's blog. But certainly feel free to do a search and It's fairly easy to create your own also. And you could imagine I could go on, I could add maybe an iPad one or an Android one. And as long as these map or the paths map to structures or folder structures in the MVC app, you're fairly good. So finally, we do need to add one for the desktop as well. So I'm going to add a new WebForm View Engine. And I think we should be set. So just to prove this is going to work, I went ahead and edited my index.aspx and a beautiful UI element that says, hello, iPhone. So let's compile this. Let's make sure that it works in the browser. So just do a refresh here. And yes, right, nothing changed. And let's do a refresh in the simulator. Oops. And for those with great eyesight, let me view in. And as you can kind of see, that yes, it was detected that this is an iPhone. It got sent to a different view, and that view now shows hello iPhone. So some progress. And while that's good and allows us to do routing, it kind of still looks like my original web page. So, okay, we didn't really turn it into a mobile app. We just said how to deal with mobile devices coming in. So one of the things that we can look at is what do we need to do on the view side to actually make this look and feel a bit more mobile friendly. And you may have seen, if you've been looking in the space, quite a few mobile web frameworks. So historically, this started off as a project called IUI, kind of bled into a number of projects, one of which was called JQ Touch. And certainly, a lot of the industry is now kind of rallying around and supporting one of the official jQuery projects called jQuery Mobile. And let's have a quick let's go back to the demo in essence of time and kind of see what it takes to add those types of libraries. So I'm going to switch back to my Visual Studio here. And if you've used ASP.NET before, you're probably familiar with this file. It's called a site.master file. Every file uses that to, or potentially every file uses that to do things like CSS setup or library setup. So what I've done is I've gone ahead and literally copied that and created a new one called mobile site.master. And there's a few things worth pointing out here. What we have is we have a CSS that comes from jQuery Mobile. We have then links to the actual jQuery library itself, and then also links to jQuery Mobile's latest build, which is Alpha 4.1. And then what we've done, the way jQuery Mobile works, is you structure the page in a particular way, but also using a lot of the HTML5 data dash attributes. And if you've gone to any of the HTML5 sessions, you'll probably have heard about these. These are kind of used fairly everywhere. And what it allows us to do is kind of break up the page in terms of what I've called roles. So we've got a header here, we've got some content, and then we've got a footer, which should appear as two buttons. So based on that, what I am going to do is go back to my index page. Oh, and the squigglies here is obviously the validation is HTML5. It's complaining that it's not HTML 4.01. Service Pack 1, which I've not yet installed on this machine, goes a long way to fix that. So let's go back to my index site that we saw. And this time I'm going to say mobile site.master. And switch back to the emulator and do a refresh. So what's now happened is the HTML behind is exactly the same. I've done nothing to structure that any differently. All we're doing is applying a skin and a series of themes from jQuery Mobile. And as you can see, I've still got the Hello Phone P tag there. And hopefully, when I click on Sessions on now, we'll see a couple of things. One is a fairly interesting animation. That was all JavaScript, but it looked very native. And then we've actually taken the unstructured list here and put them into a very native-looking list. This works if I rotate the device. So we've got kind of funky things happening. And then we've got this kind of bar at the bottom, so I can go back to the home page, flip that around. I can also do kind of interesting transitions like the about screen. And yet all of that is done in on an ASP.NET MVC backend, which of course can be hosted in Azure, using a lot of the power from the jQuery mobile framework. So looking good. It's kind of looking like a web app, but it's still a mobile web app. So yes, we could go live with this, and I could show you all the sessions on now, and that would be great. But how about things like accessing the camera or getting the location? That would be kind of cool. Or maybe storing things locally on the device, or more importantly, uploading this to the App Store. Obviously, we don't rely on people going to m.visitmix.com. And a lot of this functionality today can be done through a number of device-integrated web frameworks. So you may have heard of things like AppCelerator from Titanium. PhoneGap is an open-source project from Natobi up in Vancouver. And Unify is a project from Deutsche Telekom that's an extension of PhoneGap. And what a lot of these frameworks do is allow you to create a custom shell that can host web content, but in the context of a native application. So going back to our diagram here, we take the phone app, and effectively you have a shell with a web view controller in it, but you have also access to the native libraries on the phone through a JavaScript bridge. So that means I can create a piece of HTML that has a JavaScript function that accesses local things on the device. In addition, I can also access local storage. So I can actually, not only can I go to the web role in Azure, but I can also access local HTML files on the device, or maybe even write something to the HTML5 web storage framework for persistent storage. And finally, the beauty of this is because this is running within a native wrapper, this native shell can be uploaded to the App Store. And yes, of course, you need to obviously deal with Apple's policy for what's allowed and not, but generally, there's actually quite a few apps using this model now since Apple's restrictions were lifted. So let's take a look at what this looks like through PhoneGap. So this is the PhoneGap project. If you've done anything with Xcode, this is a native Xcode project. It looks and feels and smells very much like one, so I can set the icon, I can set images for display, all the build settings, the bindings. It really is a native application. However, there's kind of one variant here, and this is this folder at the top called www. And when we dig into it, we get effectively a local file or a local set of HTML files that we can actually access and write on the device. So I've got the PhoneGap libraries here. I kind of go down, and you can kind of see that this is just a regular HTML file. I've kind of preloaded it with some stuff here, of course. And this is just a HTML document. Again, I'm using the jQuery mobile libraries. And if everything works, unlike last time, we should see this running on the phone. So let me pray to the demigods. And run. Oh, this is killing me today. Killing me. Always works in a hotel room, that's what I say. All right, I'm going to try once more, and then we'll do the infamous reboot. And then I'm going to buy a new phone. Oh, this looks better. Come on, come on, come on. Oh, it's just hanging there. Okay, one more time and then we'll give it a reboot. That seemed to work last time. I have absolutely no idea why these things aren't deploying. Oh, that's a good question. Ah, there we go. I think that could be the answer to my sins. Okay, let me do a reboot of the device, and then I will carry on with some slides, and then we'll come back because it all beautifully comes together in the end. Yeah, so PhoneGap, so the question was, what do you use for the Android version in terms of IDE? Yes, they have a plugin for Eclipse. So very similar model in terms of you can use PhoneGap for Android as well. So you're within a native application, and then again you have that kind of www folder that you can input to. So scenario two takeaways: mobile websites let you target multiple devices. Of course, with jQuery Mobile, there's a lot of native rendering or native-looking rendering for both iPhone and Android, as well as also Windows Phone 7 as of the last release. ASP.NET MVC, you saw the view engine support for kind of deciding what the routing looks like. Certainly, recommendation is to use MVC3 because it has support for improved HTML5 attributes. And as we'll see, hopefully, in a few seconds with the demo, we get a good hybrid approach with PhoneGap. And things to watch out for, there's many, many different UI frameworks. It's like almost every day I see a new framework come about. So certainly as you're going through that research, always wise to kind of think about that carefully. And I'm going to give this, my phone is back up and working. I'm going to give this a go. Dodgy cable or something. Oh, all right. I think we're in, could be in business here. There we go. Okay, so I'm hoping. There we go. So this is my PhoneGap application. So what you're seeing here is actually not the Azure application, it's the local HTML. And just as I was explaining, I can hook into the camera. So there's a button here called Upload Photo. I click on that, and again, it accesses the camera control. I can take a beautiful picture and then pass that back to the page. And then what I can also do is actually then go across to the site that you saw before. So this one is actually running on Windows Azure. So I click on View Sessions. That takes me to my Azure site. I click on Sessions on Now. And I'm hoping that it's going to play ball. Yay, there we go. So we kind of get the same experience, but on the actual device there. And yet, this is all running within the concept of that PhoneGap-based container. Okay, so about 10 minutes left. Let me talk a little bit about notifications. So obviously we've looked at pushing stuff to the cloud, accessing applications in the cloud, but what happens if we need to get stuff back? Now, let's imagine that we're at the conference and we want to know what sessions have changed. So maybe rooms changed or titles changed or speakers didn't show up after the party. We could create like a page on that, but typically then you're relying on people to actually go and check that, which typically isn't going to be reliable. So instead, what we potentially could do is use push notifications. The way push notifications work is I've got a native application. It registers with Apple's push notification services, or also called APN. And from there, once that registration is complete, the user actually needs to do an acceptance. So when they first launch the app, they get the little kind of, do you want this app to send you push notifications that you've probably seen? And from there on, we can actually send messages to the device. So one of the ways of doing this in Windows Azure is through something called a worker role. And a worker role is similar to a web role, but it's kind of optimized for background tasks. So it's not really a web server per se, but it's one of these roles that you can give a task to, and it can, say, monitor events and do stuff on your behalf. So let's say we have a worker role, and it wants to send a message to a particular device. The way this works is it sends the message payload. The payload kind of looks like this. It's actually an open SSL socket, and we send a binary message in this particular format. There's a few bytes that indicate the command and the token length. We then send the device token, which is the unique ID for the phone. We then send the actual payload itself, which is a JSON formatted message. And if everything works okay, then the device actually sees that message appear. So obviously one of the ways we can extend this, obviously just having that worker role alone is interesting but not very functional. Also within Windows Azure is the concept of a queue. So what we could say is, well, hey, if we've got a queue set up, we could add things to the Azure queue and get the worker role to pick them off the queue and send the messages through through the push notification service. And in addition, we could also come back to the web role that we were looking in the same in the previous demo. So let me kind of walk this through because there's kind of a few boxes here. So let's imagine that this session has changed rooms. I go to the website. As an administrator, I update the website and say this session has indeed changed. That will add a message to the Azure queue. The worker role will pick that message from the queue, send a push notification. That notification will come down to the device, so it gets received on the device. And not only can we display a message, but then we can also take an action on that as well. So within the push notification framework, you can send effectively like a dictionary of requests or a dictionary of objects that you can pass to your application. So I can send, and then from there, I can have the application actually go hit the web role and hopefully come back with the details for the change session. So tempting the demo gods just one last time, I'm going to see whether this works. So I'm going to run this same project here. And I'm going to flip to the viewer. So there's my application running. So this is the same PhoneGap application that you saw that's accessing the ASP.NET content from Azure. I'm going to move that into the background. And then I'm going to switch back and log into the admin portal on my Azure site. So here's my list of sessions. And it just so happens that this session, data in the HTML5 world, has actually changed. So it's actually changed from Breakers G to Breakers A as the new room. So this is kind of where I have to do kind of two things at once. I'm going to save. I'm going to move back to the device. I'm going to pray to the demo gods that this is going to send me a push notification. If you thought the other demos were hairy. because now I'm relying on, hey, look at that. Thank you. I'm saved for now. So we've got this push notification through, Mix 11 demo. The code is HTM02. The room has changed to Breakers A. So I could dismiss this, I could hit the close button, but let's actually access the view button here and see what happens. So that takes me into PhoneGap. It's now making a request to that web role in Azure, and if everything's with me, go on. You can do it. Hey, there we go. We have the session details that have been pulled from the Azure web role as a result of getting that notification. So scenario three, kind of push notifications takeaways. Obviously, APN, Apple's push notification, is really useful for updating the user based on events that have happened. The combination of a worker role, a queue, and a web role running in Azure can actually make a really effective way of getting notifications to the device. And of course, as you saw in the demo, it can also be used with a lot of these kind of hybrid shells, such as PhoneGap. Watch out. So within the code, in fact, let me just skim through what that actually took. I kind of celebrated too quickly and didn't actually show you how I actually built this thing. So we have a worker role here. And we've got a code that we go down. Effectively, the way the worker role works is you've got an onStart method, an onStop method, and then this method in the middle called run. And what we do is we access the queue that you heard about in the presentation. And every 10 seconds, we look at the queue and we see if there's any messages that have come from the admin site. If we do have a message, we call initialize APN. We construct the message, we send the message, and then we close the connection. And if we go up to initialize APN, you'll see that it's constructing a new TCP client. And the message is effectively doing what you saw in the presentation. It's actually constructing that that kind of byte message that it's going to send. We create the device token, and we represent that as a list of bytes. We create the payload. This is the JSON message. So we're going to send an alert. We send the message that appears in the push notification, i.e. room has changed. And then we also send the session code that we can pass to PhoneGap to actually then call the site on Azure. We write that to the memory stream, and then we just push that out into the connection. And then on the PhoneGap side, take a look at the delegate here. Go down. Well, first of all, we actually register for the remote notifications. If anyone's done anything with push notification, that will look very familiar. Once we do get a remote notification, we actually go through. We inspect the payload here. We've got a nice regex to pull out the actual session code there. And if a session code was actually found, what we do is we create a new JavaScript call to handle open URL, and we pass that JavaScript call to the web view that's actually hosting the content. And within that web view page itself, we have the handle open URL that got called, and literally we just switch to the URL in question. So we're getting the session code, we're constructing a URL, and then we're telling that PhoneGap application, go to that page and go serve it up for me. So one of those takeaways that was on the slide is about persistent connections. Within that worker role, just for the purpose of the demo, I'm creating and tearing down the connection for every message. If you're sending a lot of messages, you should not do that. And instead, you shouldn't do it because Apple may see it as a denial of service on their gateway. So what you should do instead is actually open a connection, keep that connection alive within the worker role, and then send messages for the duration of the application. So just something to bear in mind. So I think we're pretty much out of time here. Quick conclusion. Historically, there's not really been, I won't say interaction, but kind of knowledge sharing between iOS and Windows Azure. You kind of search for iPhone and Azure today, and you just kind of get some mixed results. But I think hopefully what you've seen today, albeit problems with my cable, is there are a lot of possibilities for building iPhone and iPad apps that really leverage Windows Azure, whether that's pushing stuff into the cloud from the device, whether that's accessing applications that are running within the cloud, or whether that's actually receiving notifications from servers or roles running in the cloud. I think there's actually quite a few interesting possibilities when you end up combining the two technologies. So with that, I would like to thank you. You've been a great audience to take a photo of. And if I can help with any further inquiries or questions, here's my email address. So thank you.